You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everyone? Do not adjust your headphones. This is the Locked On Nets podcast, and I am Josh Bass, filling in as host, as analyst, and everything in between for Gavin today. He can't be with us because he is announcing the New York City High School basketball tournament. I'm not sure exactly what the name of it is. We can see if he listened to this podcast, if he's going to correct me or not. So this will be a good way indicator for that. But he's announcing at Barclays Center. It'll probably be done by the time you're hearing this. But sitting in the courtside seats of the likes that Sarah Kustak, Ryan Rucco, friend of the show, Ian Eagle, Jim Spanarkle, where they all usually sit. So good on Gavin for getting to have a little bit of that Nets magic this weekend. And we're going to try to get you guys some more episodes the last month of the season. I know we haven't been able to sync our schedules up as much with me traveling a lot for work, and Gavin has all of his stuff going on, doing his play-by-play. And he has a dog that's very high maintenance, and he goes on at least 7 or 8 walks a day with that dog. So that's a pretty big part of his life. But let's get you guys some content for a Sunday afternoon. Nets go 1-1 this weekend. Friday, tough loss against Philadelphia. Wasn't able to watch the game until later and was following along on my phone. And we had a big lead, but I think the big turning point of the game was we have a 7 or 8 point lead most of the second quarter. And then TJ McConnell just pulling up from deep with 30 seconds left, knocks that down. Sixers get a stop, come right back. JJ Redick hits a three. And then at halftime, it's only a 3 point lead for the Nets. And really, once this third quarter came around, Philly got their act together. And then the fourth quarter, back and forth, the Nets just can't close it out late. As I'm sure you all know, it's been a problem this entire season. But I thought the Nets played really well. One guy I want to highlight, Jahlil Okafor. We've kind of given him a hard time this entire season since he's been on the team, and pretty well deserved. But he was actually excellent guarding Joel Embiid. I think Embiid had 4 or 5 possessions in a row where he tried to score on Okafor, just couldn't do it. Tried to bang him down inside, and Okafor is very good at one specific thing, and that's just being 7 feet tall and a huge body. So he's different from Jared Allen in the sense that he really can bang with post players inside, and it's not always the most effective thing on offense, but it is a helpful tool for him on defense. So he did a good job staying in front of Embiid there. I mean, last time the Nets played the Sixers, Embiid just bullied Jared Allen in the post, or 2 times ago, bullied Jared Allen in the post, even though the Nets got the win. Embiid almost had a comeback single-handedly. So it was a good job by Okafor. And then Embiid tried to go to the perimeter, shoot a couple threes, and he wasn't knocking them down, but that's good defense. I mean, Embiid's a 30% three-point shooter for the season. If he's taking threes, honestly, even if they're open, that's perfectly fine as long as he's not in the blocks and just causing havoc. So good job by Okafor there. He also was 5 of 8 from the field. Had some nice run against his former team, so good to see Kenny Atkinson getting him out there. Let's see, other big takeaways. Damari Carroll, I mean, both the last games, he's been phenomenal. 18-11 against Philly. And then he really came alive in the second half against Dallas. 19 points, 12 rebounds, 7 of 12 from the field. He's been picking it up in the second half of the season. I think shooting, he's up to 37% on threes for the year, which is honestly terrific compared to where he's been in the past. I mean, besides last year in Toronto, which is kind of an aberration, he's been more of a 34% three-point shooter. So good to see him up there. Possibly gets traded this offseason. I mean, he has a lot of value, so we'll see what happens. But I would think that the Nets look to move him because even though he's a veteran leader and Kenny Atkinson loves him, he's not going to be on the team in the, I guess it'll be the 2019-2020 season. So just see what you can get for him. Even if it's just a very late first and maybe they're taking on some bad salary, I'd still try to look for that just to get some assets. And maybe then we could start packaging picks together and move up towards the late lottery, like mid-teens. I don't know. Just try to get someone of value for Damari Carroll if we can package the Toronto pick with him and see what we can find there. D'Angelo Russell was, I mean, I don't know. I saw on Twitter a lot of people were giving Atkinson grief because D'Lo started out pretty good in the first quarter and then really didn't have any momentum and finished the game 3 of 14. I think he was 1 of 9 in the second half. But listen, everyone in the system doesn't play that much minutes. I mean, Joe Harris played 36 minutes against Philly, but for the most part, everyone's in that 27 to 30 range. So like, what do you want? You want him to play D'Lo 24 minutes straight? I mean, the guy is clearly not in, like, peak conditioning. I'm not, he's not like a, I'm trying to think who's, like, someone that's just always being able to run, like a a J.J. Redick type sprinting around screens. He's not in that great shape. I mean, he kind of takes a ton of plays off on defense. In offense, he's kind of just dribbling around, not really moving a lot. So it's not someone that you want to play for that long a period. I mean, his numbers might be a little stunted because he's only playing 28 minutes a game, but you have to play the players that are doing well. And Spencer Dinwiddie was really good in that first half, and then he tailed off in the second half, but neither him or D'Lo was really killing it. I don't know what you want Atkinson to do. I think LeVert did a really nice job in that Philly game. 16 points, 6 of 11 from the field. Hit a couple threes. I mean, his stroke's looking better, but it was, I don't know, it's a rough game for the Nets. And there had been losses this season where at the end of the game, they just bungled it so badly that I was frustrated after. I think this one, they were just playing a better team, and there was no real point where I was like, wow, the Nets really blew it. I mean, one pass where D'Angelo Russell was in, they were bringing the ball up pretty quickly, and he didn't see Ben Simmons sneaking behind. So when he throws that pass to Damari Carroll across court, Simmons is able to pick it off and get fouled. But no real, I don't know, I just didn't see anything where the Nets could have done anything differently. I mean, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson had an incredible game, 21 points, 10 rebounds. Nets shoot 15 of 30 from three. I mean, if you shoot 50% on threes for a game, you're going to expect to win. Unfortunately, they just weren't able to get anything going from two-point range. Played a team in the Sixers that are just worked together pretty well, and J.J. Redick had an awesome game. So it's tough, but I see why Nets fans are frustrated. Moving on to the Dallas game. Obviously, much more less formidable opponent, I should say. And then D'Lo had a pretty good game in this one, 9 of 17, 22 points. But he just doesn't do it for me because he doesn't get to the free throw line. So, and when you're not getting to the free throw line at all, you're going to be super inconsistent. So that's why we see he combines for one free throw attempt in the 76ers and Nets game. And he has one good game when his shots are falling against Dallas, and one game where he can't hit anything against the Sixers. So I don't see any way that he's really going to become a franchise player. And I could still think he could be more of a very good six-man type, like a Jamal Crawford, even though they have different games, but similar effect. But the Nets, I mean, he's in his third year, and he really hasn't shown any improvement. He still can't shoot threes consistently, doesn't get to the line well, not a great defender, inconsistent playmaker. So if it's your third year, you have to have something, so like a bankable skill that really going forward, you know, you can have that as your kind of premier skill and the rest of your game can be built off that. And D'Angelo Russell just doesn't have it. I mean, he doesn't get his teammates involved. So even when he's having a hot game, there's really not a lot he can kind of bring to the table and getting teammates involved and keeping them engaged. And that, I think that contributes to the defensive end as well. But Nets were able to get the win in this one. RHJ with another solid game. He's been their most consistent player this year. I mean, he had some times against Dallas where the Nets had kind of let the lead slip away. They're down by two or three. You're thinking, hey, if they don't score here, maybe momentum's going to be lost. And he's just canning 16-footers, takes to the rim. It doesn't always look pretty. Actually, I don't think it ever looks pretty. But, you know, if he is getting fouled and he's scoring at a league-efficient rate right now. I believe he has a 55% true shooting, which is decent. Listen, it's not going to – I'm not saying he's like a Giannis type or someone that's really like a top scorer or Jimmy Butler, but he's doing enough where on this Nets team he's still looking like a standout compared to the rest of these guys we have out there. Let's see, a few other notes. Quincy Acey, I mean, I have to give him a lot of credit because he's been kind of a whipping boy for us on the podcast and all of Nets Twitter this year. But after Dante Cunningham goes down with that concussion slash eye injury, I think it was, at the hands of Embiid, he did a really admirable job just being thrown in there, and he made some dumb plays. I think he fouled J.J. Redick. He just like ran into J.J. Redick in that Philly game on a three-point attempt, and Redick made all three free throws. That was in the fourth quarter, but did a good enough job overall. 5 of 11 from three in two games. It's not easy to come off the bench completely cold and hit threes at a pretty good rate, and he was doing that. So kudos to him for really not being a complete liability out there like he's proved to be this year. Hopefully Cunningham does come back soon because he's been a nice addition for the Nets, but we'll see. I'm excited that Atkinson gives people a shot like Acey, and they can come in and be prepared and do a good job. I think that's credit to Atkinson as a coach, that he really is able to keep his guys motivated so that when they do get an opportunity, they're able to capitalize on it. Good to see Jared Allen back the last two games. A little bit of rust, but he had four block shots against Dallas. I thought he did a better job. He was kind of just taken out of the game in Philly. He had one alley-oop late where he could have finished it for a potential and one, ended up missing that, but he was shoved in the back. I think he's going to be kind of round into form as we get further along towards the end of the year. He had a great chemistry with Dinwiddie, so it's interesting to see Dinwiddie get benched, and now D'Lo's kind of be the main guy. I think it's fine because the Nets weren't winning games. I mean, when you lose 15 out of 16 or 15 out of 17, I forget what it was, there's no harm in trying something different. And I think we'll see how D'Lo responds to kind of being the sole guy in the starting lineup, because it was kind of a back and forth between him and Dinwiddie. It was an awkward fit. D'Lo didn't want to really take the lead on that because Dinwiddie had kind of become the heart and soul of the team while he was out. But at the same time, D'Lo has the pedigree of being the number two overall pick. And I'm sure all the Nets players know that if the team wants to be good in the next 3 to 5 years, it's going to be because D'Angelo Russell really takes the next leap and becomes an all-star caliber player. Will he do that? I don't know. I don't really think so. But at the same time, you have to give him that chance. So Atkinson makes the adjustment there. Dinwiddie goes to the bench, still playing a ton of minutes, but they're not overlapping as much. Still overlapping a little bit. I think they played 10 or so minutes together last night. And it was fine. I mean, yeah, it's still a period where if it's going to work out, it's probably going to be in the offseason where they really learn how to play together well and understand the spots in the court that each other like. Also, that Dinwiddie three from about 35 feet last night just pulled up at the end of the shot clock was sick. I mean, that's the kind of plays he makes where it's like, wow, this guy is just a stone-cold killer. So we're going to take a quick break here, and then I'm going to break down a few of more under-radar draft prospects that you can watch in the NCAA tournament as we head into the round of 32, and the second weekend is coming up soon. So stay tuned. So now we are going to get into the draft. March Madness is here, is upon us. I don't know about you guys, but my bracket's already been busted. I had Arizona winning it all. They obviously lose in the first game to Buffalo on Wednesday, or Thursday night, sorry. It's probably better that honestly it didn't work out, because if Sean Miller's team had made a deep run, all I have to hear about is about him dropping the bags for DeAndre Ayton and the recording and all this stuff, and I'm just kind of sick of that. Obviously, college players should be paid. I don't think that's really a controversial take, but it just sucks to hear about the NCAA and like all the kind of gross things that are going on and all the shady stuff. Just make it okay to pay players. If you have a DeAndre level, Ayton level talent, it's fine to give him $100,000, because honestly, he's going to be worth so much more to your school in that year that he's there. So that, obviously, glad we kind of avoided that story. I'm going to give you guys a few people to watch that I think could potentially be nice second round picks for the Nets, potentially even late first. Guys that to watch out for. Obviously, we don't have our top pick this year, so we're not going to be able to get that DeAndre Ayton, Trae Young, whoever you really fancy, whether that's Michael Porter, Jaren Jackson Jr. But there are a few under the radar guys that I think could help the team out. So we're going to start Syracuse guard Tyus Battle. He's a 6'6 wing. Looking at his stats, honestly, if he declared after his freshman year, he would have probably had a higher draft stock, but he's averaging 19 points a game. His percentages are depressed because, one, he's playing 39 minutes a game. I'm sure he's exhausted, but he's only shooting 40% from the field, 32% from three. But I think just watching him shoot, honestly, the ball should go in a lot more. So kind of like I'm trying to think who's like that, like a Jeff Green type, where it's like their form's picture perfect. It just doesn't go in as much as you'd like. But 84% from the line, he gets to the line a lot. So I think that he's actually someone that his underlying shooting stroke really isn't reflective in his percentages. And I think that he's someone that he needs to prove, obviously, that he can guard man-to-man, because Syracuse plays a zone, which is don't get me started on that, because they make every game they're in unwatchable, because no college team knows how to beat a zone. But Battle's someone I like, and I think that he could actually be a pretty good 3-and-D player, kind of a cheap version of a Mikhail Bridges, who's obviously going to be like a top 12 pick from Villanova. Battle's an interesting guy, and I think that he's someone that he could fit well in this Nets team and be like a solid role player, a Josh Hart type that they're looking for, someone that's going to make everyone else better and really help guys like D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie in filling all the cracks in the lineup. And if they can maximize their talent, it's going to be surrounded by role players. And I think Tyus Battle can be an excellent role player. It's not someone that you really want with the 28th pick. It's not a sexy like swing to take, but I think he's an effective guy that could be in a rotation someday. So moving on to someone else I really like, West Virginia guard Javon Carter. This dude has been in college for it feels like 10 years. I'm sure you've heard his name if you follow college basketball, but he's someone that I think is really gone under the radar because whenever you've seen someone for that long, you always pick apart their faults. I can think of guys like Miles Bridges and Rob Williams on Texas A&M. They come back to school, and now everyone's just saying, oh, these guys are terrible. Like, what's the deal with them? He didn't improve on this in the offseason. He didn't do that. But I know Carter's not on the same level as those guys, but he's someone that averages 3 steals a game. He's a complete pest. He changes the game defensively. We saw in that Toronto game, me and Gavin spoke about how Freddie Van Fleet just changed the game with his athleticism and picking the ball up 94 feet and tiring out the Nets guards. Carter has the potential to do that. He's someone that's a complete pest. Good three-point shooter, averaging 39% on threes on over 5 attempts a game. He did that this year. He did that last year. He's being undervalued, in my opinion. Good passer, 7 assists per game, and he just gets into it. And he's not the perfect player. He's not a star, but you need players like that who are able to make dynamic plays, get steals, and able to help you run in transition. I think he's someone that could be a really interesting fit on the Nets as a second-round pick. Obviously, we all know the Nets have had a lot of problems the past 2 years at point guard, and actually since Jason Kidd, because, I mean, Devin Harris had that one good year. D-Will, I mean, he who must not be named, he's not someone that I ever want to think about ever again because he was just a complete flop in a Brooklyn uniform, but you can never have enough point guards. Whitehead, clearly not someone that the Nets think of in their long-term plans because he's just been buried in the rotation this year and shuttled between Long Island and Brooklyn, even though he scored 50 points in one game. But Carter, someone fill in, and then next year, let's say you have D'Lo, Dinwiddie, Lynn, and Carter. 4 of those guys, you have to hope that at least any 2 are healthy at any time and able to form a nice little backcourt rotation. So before we wrap up, one last guy, Rui Hachimura on Gonzaga. We've spoken about him a little bit. Really dynamic scorer in the half court. I think he's 62% on 2-pointers this year. The guy cannot hit a 3 to save his life. 9 of 40 from 3 for his college career, but 80% from the line. So underlings of a good shooting stroke there. He's someone that I would take a chance on. He's super athletic, 6'8". Pretty good wingspan. I think he's at least a 7-foot wingspan. So take a chance on him. See if we can develop him. And he's someone that could be a nice complement to Jarrett Allen, especially if he's able to develop at least even like a 20-footer. Not even saying a 3-point shot right now. But he's someone I'd keep an eye on. Gonzaga already made it to the Sweet 16. And Rui was excellent against Ohio State. 25 points, 9 of 11 from the field. Got to the line 12 times. He's just a physical beast, especially going up against those guys in the West Coast Conference. Excited to see how he would do in an NBA setting, but I think with proper coaching, he could really be developed into a very good third big man off the bench. So that's going to wrap it up for us today on the Locked On Nets podcast. Me and Gavin should be back on a Tuesday. On a Tuesday, as Drake likes to say. So I'll be in Miami tomorrow for work, hopefully catching the game while I'm at the airport. Listen, we have to put on Nets Grizzlies. I don't care. It's not for gambling purposes. It's for my podcast. You all have to watch it, and I'll subject all the other bar patrons to Nets Grizzlies showdown, which hopefully the Nets should win. We're making progress, folks. I mean, we have 2 more wins than last year already. Hopefully we can finish at 26, 27 wins for the year, and I'll be happy if we have a pretty good end to the season. And at least if some of our guys like LeVert and D'Lo show signs for progress in the future, that's really what we're looking for. Listen, it's hard to give you guys, I don't know how Mike Francesa did a solo show every day for the last like 8 years since Mad Dog left, doing 5 hours a day, because this takes a lot of courage, a lot of strength, honestly, just to be able to talk for this long with no one to bounce your ideas off of. So everyone, be appreciative. Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNets. You can follow me at jmbass_. Gavin is at Gavin Shaw. And we will see you guys on Tuesday.